Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Hello, my name is Gary Mansfield, and this is the Ministry of Arts podcast, where each week I'll be speaking to a different artist. Now let's begin by bagging these bongos.
Yeah, right. Crazy.
Hello and welcome to episode 249 of the Ministry of Arts podcast. Today, I'm going to be introducing you to Holly Searle, aka the Subversive Stitcher. I first met Holly when we was both showing in Cash's King at the Saatchi Gallery several years ago, which was co-created by a good friend of the podcast and good friend of Holly's, Carrie Reichart, who we speak about in this podcast. Her work, as her moniker might indicate, is a politically charged commentary on social injustice, created with needle and thread. There is a nostalgic visual innocence to Holly's work, none more so than the current exhibition at the Riverside Studios, where she is using vintage tea towels as her canvas, with fabric text cut from a fridge magnet alphabet. Perfect. Well, I don't want to give away too much about this episode, so please come with me as I spoke to Holly Searle, aka the Subversive Stitcher.
Hi.
Hello, how are you?
Hang on, you can't see me, can you? Let me just get that up, sort that out.
Where are you?
Here we go. Start video. Hey!
Oh no, turn it off, turn it off!
Yeah, that's not what you want to see on the
How are you today, you good?
Yeah, I'm pretty good. Yeah, not too bad, thanks. Good. Just been trying to sort this out so I could do it on my phone and everything, which sometimes is not always easy. So,
All right. How are you today? Anyway, you good?
Yeah, no, I'm really good. Yeah, I've had. I feel really good today because I've been really busy lately, and then it's really funny, like when you make stuff, because you just go up in roller coasters, don't you, of kind of art admin, doing art, doing all the boring stuff, and then, you know, trying to think of looking for, you know, panning for more gold, I guess. So, but I'm pretty good, yeah.
Good. Is it nice and sunny where you are?
No, it's overcast. I can't remember. It was sunny this morning, but it's not sunny now. So.
Whereabouts are you at the moment?
Yeah, I'm in kind of Greater London, so I'm over in sort of, well, we ended up in Uxbridge, but that's a whole long story attached to that, because I was born in right in the middle of London near Trafalgar Square, but I was always in West London, which is like how I know Carrie and everything, because we kind of grew up in the same bunch of people, and then during COVID, just we all ended up being in the same sort of place, because myself and my kids, we all shared a house together during that time, which was, we had a great time, you know, we had a really good positive experience of COVID, but so that's how I ended up here, and we're about to move again, so I've got no idea where I'm going to go, so anyway.
We mentioned there about Carrie being Carrie Reichart. Your work lends itself so well to hers, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, because she really plays a massive part in my sort of, I guess, even though I was always someone who made things and everything, and I come from a family a bit like that, you know, and I think that, and I remember lots of stuff happened to me at a particular junction in my life. And I remember when, because my early pieces are more to do with embroidery, using embroidery to sort of like have a voice about something, which was also influenced by a woman that was incarcerated, a lady called Mary Frances Heaton. Her story is really interesting about how she dared to sort of vocalize what she thought about the local minister not paying her for tutoring her children. So what do you do with sort of chopsy women? You put them in a mental asylum for 41 years to keep them quiet. And I remember seeing her work, the Welcome Collections. They had an exhibition about mental health, and she'd used these samplers, a classic sampler, to petition Queen Victoria. And it really had a profound effect on me. And I thought, wow, I never really thought about using, because I can't paint and things like that. And I thought, I never thought about using that medium to sort of like have a voice. And that all coincided with me reaching a certain point in my life. And, you know, when I'd always been a really shy kid. And I remember Carrie was still finishing like the front of her house and everything, her mosaic house in Chiswick. And I remember I went along and sort of like, we sort of rekindled our relationship, I suppose. It was like, yeah, so I mean, I know Carrie from that, but we kind of know each other from doing this kind of stuff. But then we also know each other because I knew her brothers and sisters, and we all sort of grew up in the same sort of bunch of people around that area and everything. But also, yeah, so she was brilliant, because she said to me, you know, you have on your Instagram account, you have like, this is your personal account. You need to divide those and have like an art one as well. And so that's how I sort of became the Subversive Stitcher and everything. And so that's my superpower, my art superpower moniker sort of thing, that my duplicity, where I kind of like, that's what all the stuff I do as Holly, and this is all the stuff I do as a Subversive Stitcher and everything. Yeah, so she's brilliant about telling me stuff like that to do, you know. So I actually saw her the other week, so we had a really nice time. But yeah,
well, funnily enough, I was chatting to her 2 days ago.
Oh yeah, okay.
And it was the first time for a long time. You know how Instagram is now. You don't tend to sort of see people passing your feed how it used to be. Stuff gets thrown at you rather than passes by you, doesn't it, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
Carrie has always been one of the artists that whenever she's got something new, whenever a name pops up, there's always a little bit of warmth in me heart, you know. She's brilliant. She's brilliant.
Well, she's very caring about people, and she's super smart as well. And, you know, she really kind of brings all that to the table when she does stuff with the work she does and everything. And she's a brilliant woman as well. So I really admire her for all those things.
I think she was like number 5 or 6 on this podcast. That's probably right, been number 4.
A long time ago, Gary.
Yeah, it was the first. She was in my first day of recording.
Yeah,
her and Bob were two that I'd done one after the other.
Yeah, so that's right. Yeah, I mean, that was all like, that was such a fabulous time, that kind of Cash is King thing was just so fantastic. And it was just such an elated sort of time to be able to like be in the Saatchi Gallery, and we all came together. And I made so many fabulous friends from doing that, and who I still like, I mean, you know, they're just my friends and everything. So Cash is King wasn't just the thing about, you know, bringing together all these like random people who were good at making stuff to deface money and everything. It was so much more than that. It was like a club of kind of not young British artists, but post, probably more like middle-aged British artists, you know, who kind of like all kind of got together and made new friends and everything. So it was such a brilliant time. It really was.
It was good fun, that, wasn't it?
Really good fun.
The show itself was great, fabulous, but the party beforehand, or say the party, the opening of the show was
fantastic. Evening. Yeah, it was so good. It was so good. There's nothing like sharing all of that with a whole bunch of other people as well. Because when you work for you, you're by yourself. It's like you don't really have. I mean, I have a lot of friends I can ask questions, especially in the art game, and sort of say, "Oh, what do you think about that? Do you think that's right, or do you think that sounds a bit dodgy?" Or, you know, but when you're with a whole bunch of people, I love that. That community is so brilliant to do that.
Well, we've already given a little hint of what you create, but Holly, how would you explain what you do to someone that didn't know your work?
Okay, so I always say I use a making you think with a needle and thread. So what I do is I use my needle and my thread in a number of ways, be it through embroidery or I've got so many different projects, and one of the projects that was born in you know, lockdown was the Subverted Vintage Tea Towel series. But what I basically do is I think of a way of, I kind of come from a culture where I always felt like I was bullied when I was a kid and things like this. So, and then I never really said anything. But then as I got older, I kind of use that medium to raise awareness about issues in society or personal issues. But I never sort of say, I hate you because you're a twat or something. I always sort of say, I try and use a bit of cleverness and humour as well, because yeah. I think that when people look at, I think it's really easy to say, oh, piss off, you're a twat or something, but that's it. It's just, it's like a drop mic moment. Yeah. Why, that doesn't say anything. So if you actually say you have multiple sort of layers of what you say in something, people go, oh, that's funny. And then they kind of go, oh, actually, that's quite dark. And then it makes them think about something. So I want people to think about things. So I kind of, that's what I do. I try and raise awareness by subverting the norm about something to make you think of it in a different context. That's what I do, yeah.
And why did you start with a tea towel?
I didn't start with the tea towel. I started with embroideries. I've always made stuff ever since I was a kid. Okay, like I'm so lucky that I come from an analog world, because I had all my nan, my mum, you know, everybody sort of, we all did. I mean, I remember my nan, you probably remember this, Gary, like painted by numbers. My nan loved that, you know, so that was just so fabulous, wasn't it? But it's such a crude sort of way of like thinking about painting now, but I love that sort of thing. That, but that mindfulness of, you know, doing something is really what's missing in this world of technology. And it's like being an analog person in a technical world, I kind of got the best of both things, but yeah. also, you know, just learning to sew and say things about things is really fabulous. But the tea towels, they were kind of born out of like going into lockdown. And I thought, I mean, probably like everyone, I just thought, well, are we, is this like The Walking Dead? Are we all going to die? You know, what's, nobody knew what was going to happen. It was like really terrifying. And it was like, I thought, like all everybody, my creative mojo just went flatline, nothing at all. And I just thought, well, I can't, everything that I'd ever made up until that point, it was always come from a place of having a quick conversation with someone, something I might have read, something I might have heard on the radio, but everything was just COVID. Everything was the pandemic, you know. So I can't remember. I thought, you know what, don't worry about it. Watch Tiger King and just kind of like everyone else and just let your
make
brain...
Make a bit of banana bread.
Exactly. let your brain rest, because I find what I kind of tell myself now is I can't think of anything, distract myself with something else, and then eventually, in that process of your mind being relaxed, something will come back to it. So I remember I was just literally going on a well-known auction site on a balmy, because that first lockdown was really warm. There was no, it was not like the weather today, you know, it was kind of like there were no planes, you could hear the birds singing. It was like ideal for us all to just reset in this, which was a strange juxtaposition to what we were all going through, you know. And so going through an auction site, I thought, I'll just look at vintage textiles and see if I can find anything. And then I just ended up going down this rabbit hole, and I ended up looking at tea towels. And I just thought, oh, my God, these are just, like, beautiful. You know, they were just so amazing. Little, and I call them little domestic works of art, because they're so, I mean, they don't really have a narrative in this modern world, you know. Probably the 60s, 70s, 80s are all the best time for tea towels, because we didn't have the internet, so you have them like they're like used as the first infographics to explain about making things or remembering, you know, wedding anniversaries, things like this. And or they were like they were the physical postcard that you could use from visiting a country and things like that. So I thought, well, these are just like really kitsch and brilliant, and the colours are bold and they're fantastic. So I started ordering some, and I thought, well, I wonder if I could use that as a basis to say something about something else. So I just got them, and then I was listening to a lot of radio, you know, and podcasts and things like that at the well to just distract myself. So I just use them as a basis to say something, use the narrative of the context of the tea towel to lay over felt letters, which I literally get fridge magnets, cut round, draw them and cut round them, to sew those onto there. And then I just went from there. And then I thought, oh, I'll make 100 of these and they'll be like a narrative about things. And then I thought, well, I'm free. It's like when you write a story, you know, I thought I could just say what I want to say about anything within reason, you know. And so, and then things started to happen. And then Boris Johnson was an absolute gem for that time. Look what he did. He just messed up completely over and over again. And whether it was with Jennifer R. Curie, you know, spouting Shakespeare, or, you know, just being a complete and utter, anyway, there isn't a word in the English language either. But yeah, so it was fantastic. But also, so it kind of like encompassed global things that were going on, things in my own life, things that I wanted to say something about, things that I thought were really important to raise. So I always felt like, going back to Mary Frances Heaton being stuck in the asylum for all those years, I thought, well, there was a good parallel between those two things of her being, I mean, I was free obviously to go out, but within reason, within government guidelines, you know, but she was like, she wasn't able to do that. So I kind of like to think that I sort of echoed what she was trying to do to raise awareness about social things, if that's not too presumptuous. But yeah, so that's how that started. Now there's 145 of them, apart from the one that was stolen recently, which I can't, that really upset me. So, but yeah, so there's 145. I'm going to carry on. I'm obsessed with tea towels now. I do like workshops with them all the time and try and get people to bring out what they want to say about things, which is really, that's completely fascinating. And yeah, so I just love them. I just think they're so beautiful. They really are.
I mean, obviously calling yourself the Subversive Stitcher, you are expressing undertones, or not undertones, but you're expressing that you have a political standpoint.
Yes.
And with it being both tea towels and the text from fridge magnets, so it feels like it's a very domestic attitude.
I probably have dyslexia or whatever the number one is, and I was ridiculed at school. So then I was kind of like made to feel like an idiot and stuff. And so I, in that context, when I kind of grew up, I decided to go back to do my A-levels myself at 28. And then I did a degree, and I did the degree in film, because I just realised, interestingly enough, from an artistic point of view, that I was more stimulated by visualisation of things. But there's a category in film which is called, you know, kitchen sink dramas and things like that, you know. And it's like, I always think that it's like the return of the repressed, because it is, all of those things are quite domestic, nice little things that you never, that are practical, that you would never think would come up and challenge you about anything. And yet here they are, like, you know. And
I think that's perfect way to include everyone, isn't it? Because, you know, we may not all be left wing, right wing, you know, of various different ethnic backgrounds, but we've all got a home, you know, we've all got a domestic life.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, absolutely. Like when you think about, everything, because I do think that's what I mean. I think everybody has the right to have a voice about everything. You know, I think that's so important. And I think you should. And I think that if you shouldn't be quiet. You shouldn't. I always am amazed that we're not more French in this country and we don't revolt more, because there's so much stuff going on in this country that is absolutely ludicrous. Even the stuff to do with the water, you know, it's just so disgusting, all the pollution and everything. So all of those things just make me feel so, I mean, I remember we used to go to this school in Fulham, and I remember when Mrs. Thatcher was like education secretary, and she worked from County Hall. And my mum and dad, and we all went on this protest, and I must have been about, I don't know, 5 or 6 or something. And we remember we were all going, Mrs. Thatcher, you know, our kids can't use the loo, because there was something to do with the problem with the toilet at our school in Fulham. But also she was to do, she was taking the milk away from kids, wasn't she, and everything, you know, she was horrible. So it's like, so that's, maybe it's all ingrained in me, you know, to sort of like say, well, bloody hell, I'm not going to keep quiet. What are you going to do about it? I've got a tea towel and I'm going to use it, and I'm not afraid to use it, you know.
But that's the perfect thing of uprising, that it's coming from the home, a place of safety and security. It is, like I say, it's the everyone can come together from the domestic stance, can't they?
Yeah, they definitely can. And I think it is really interesting, because I think in the domestic sphere, it's like you would think that everything you work for and everything you work to protect and everything should be protected. It's like everyone's castle, you know. It's like, but in fact, it seems like the lines become more blurred about you should feel safe in your home. You should be able to control your own narrative. But in fact, that line is becoming less and less in your favor, you know, you do need to stand up and say something, because it's like, I mean, there's something about if you're in receipt of any sort of benefits, it's going to get to a stage where the government is going to be allowed to access your bank account details to see what you're spending. It's just Big Brother, isn't it? It's just like 1984. And it's the weirdest thing. But yeah, you should be safe. It's your castle. It's your territory, whatever. And it's like now it's, but and yet this is being governed by these idiots who are the worst purveyors of committing all these crimes and non-dom, you know, and all this stuff, and ripping people off at the worst possible lowest ebb of society had to go through with the COVID thing and everything. I mean, I always think it's so ironic that there's Parliament, and on right on the opposite side, you see the COVID memorial wall with all the hearts. It takes you 10 minutes to walk past that.
Yeah.
10 minutes, you know. And I'd be so ashamed if I worked in that place and had to see that every day, which is it's almost like a heckle, isn't it, from the other side of the river, you know.
But I don't think anything with emotion tends to penetrate Parliament, does it? Or at least this government, anyway.
No, not at all. And it's funny because, I mean, I can remember in the 80s, like, those kind of Tories, like Thatcher and her sort of, her henchmen and everything. And it's like, there was a kind of strange, I wouldn't say dignity, but a kind of dignity to those Tories, that these Tories are just like totally shameless, you know, about what they do. And it's almost like they kind of come from a point of view and a perspective where if they say, oh, well, I'm sorry about that, that kind of like rubs it out. But it's not, it's just one rule for one. That's what I mean. I don't really know why we're not revolting and running around the streets and, you know, telling them all to just do one and everything. So, yeah.
You mentioned about as a child growing up in the centre of London, and that your family were fairly creative. In what respect were they creative?
Oh, goodness me. Well, I mean, I had my dad was an interesting character. He's from the East End of London, and there's a really interesting place in Powis Road called Kingsley Hall. And these two sisters called the Lister sisters, they were like the first sort of philanthropists, I can never say that word, and Gandhi famously stayed there. So that, and they kind of like reached out to the local community and got all the kids that were poor, because, you know, it was, that's really like poor, you know, and they, and during the war, my dad was taken with them to this mill in Hertfordshire where he grew up in the country. And my dad always wanted to be a painter and all of his life. And he went to Goldsmiths and he did all of these things. So my dad always had these kind of like aspirations to be an artist, which he spent half of his life in London. And then he spent the other half of his life in West Cork in Ireland, where he set up like West Cork sort of the art centre and everything. It's all different now. It's all what I call more kind of, you know, it's not what it was. I think there's something really beautiful about the initial stages of setting up everything, where there's a more honest approach about creativity. So my dad was always doing stuff like that. And then my mum was always making things, and she was always making. That was very much a time of like, you know, I guess sort of Bieber and things like this. And my mum was from Mitcham, and she hated that suburban life, and she wanted to go and live in London and do all these things. And my parents lived in Soho when I have got an older brother, and then I've got two younger brothers, and they lived in Soho. And I remember saying to my mum, bloody hell, that must have been like extraordinary living in Soho. Like when you're, it was only it was just like one little room. It wasn't like all ritzy. Yeah, yeah. It wasn't like the sanitized version of Soho that exists today. It was like, well, you know, Rackman's Soho, all these things. My parents knew people like, you know, Michael X, all these like people, because I think life was a bit smaller then in their group of friends and everything. And my mum worked at Ronnie Scott's jazz club, and you know, all the people she met, and they were so poor. And I remember my mum saying she wished she'd always had a camera because she could have taken, she'd love to have been able to take photos of people, you know, and my brother sat on Ella Fitzgerald's lap and all these things, which all sounds like, but that was all part of my family. So I think I never really thought my family was different from any other family, but we were quite lucky because my family was sort of like, yeah, like read this, watch this, it's quite interesting sort of thing, you know. When my parents sort of did, they split up and my dad went to live in Ireland and he became quite a famous artist. Like he's quite a famous painter in Ireland. His name's Terry Searle. And then my stepdad was really cool because he turned up and he was like, he was only a little bit older than me because my mum met a younger guy, but he was, you know, watch this film and do this. And so all of those things sort of influence you as well. So I always kind of grew up liking Patsy Cline and all these different things, and like it's just a time of, I always say this as well, Gary, that now we live in a time where people are identified, the character seems to be identified by what they have, right, what they possess, normally trinkets, right, or labels and things like this. I'm so pleased that I kind of grew up in the sort of 70s and 80s, because we were kind of defined by going to Kensington Market and buying stuff from there. And, you know, you go to Oxfam and you could get like vintage 50s dresses and stuff like that. And we always, and you, if you couldn't find the shoes you wanted, then you'd spray paint shoes and do things like that, which is all very sort of Vivienne Westwood, I suppose. Like, you know, you just, and that's what created your identity, was what you could see, you know. Yeah. And I'm just always so grateful for that, because we went through two-tone and, you know, oh, my God, I used to be a rockabilly. Then we all went through this two-tone thing. And, yeah, just music has a massive influence on all of that. And just
well,
so
I think
many
that
things.
Was the changing point round about those times, because it was, we was always influenced by the music. Whereas,
yeah, definitely, yeah.
I mean, I'm not basing this on anything other than observation. It wasn't until, I think, that the Casuals came in, the early mid-80s, that was by the label rather than the music. It was whatever anyone liked, but everyone wore Lacoste, Tashini, and what have you.
Yeah, all those different things, all those things. And that all kind of, and that's really interesting, because if you think about, I always say this when, because when I do my tea towel workshops, I always give them a little sort of abridged history about tea towels and everything. But, and I've got one remarkable tea towel that features Telly Savalas, and it says the lollipop cop, and it's got Telly Savalas on it, like a tea towel, right? So I say to them, look, isn't this extraordinary? And everybody thinks it's funny and stuff. But then when you think about, when Star Wars came out, and Star Wars was the first film that produced all these tie-ins for things, this merchandise, where all of that was created, dolls, pencils, whatever, lunchboxes. But I guess before that, the creativity for marketing things was like a bit more limited. And the same is, you know, with all that kind of, it all comes around the same sort of time about creating more products, more labels for people to go and buy, and to say, oh, I like this, you know, because I bought this Star Wars figures, or because I've got this, you know, or because I wear this Beyond Borg shirt. I mean, it's really funny, because I, you know, I know people that had all those shirts, you know, and they'd spend a fortune buying all that stuff, you know. It's crazy. Did you get all those kind of like, all those like sportswear items and everything?
Yeah, well, when all the big names started coming out, and people were paying silly money then, like, you know, 30 quid for a jumper, which was unheard of, you know.
Right, yeah.
Because of the area I lived in and my dad having pubs, I got to know, you know, unscrupulous people, if you like. the fake clothing come about.
The what? The fake
clothing.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
And then, so I got into the fake clothing.
Yeah.
Very early days, while I was still at school.
Mm.
At some points, I was earning more money than people who were going to work when I was at school, you know. That turned, Holly, that turned out to be my downfall, really. Because I was getting into the fake clothing, moving up the ladder. In the end, it was when the drugs got put into a big batch of fake clothing that I ended up getting arrested and going to prison for years.
Yeah, well, that's not good, is it?
No, but then that's where I discovered art and
Exactly.
Turnaround, you know.
Yeah.
But
I think everyone has like that sort of epiphany at some point, especially with creativity, like, you know, and that was your cathartic moment where you were, you know, you were in prison and everything, and it was like, you were like, whoa, you know, I spent all that time. Because I really think life is like a massive book and it has all these chapters in it. And what you start off doing in this bit here isn't necessarily what you're meant to do, you know.
Yeah,
and for you,
yeah.
That's totally pans out that you kind of like were in, you did all that. You went, oh, this is a good deal. You know, I can get all this cash from doing all this knockoff and stuff. And then like, you're like, whoa, hang on a minute. That's not really what's rocking my boat, you know. And
yeah.
It's kind of, and then when you were in prison and everything, it's like you're kind of like, well, this is really interesting. Forgive my ignorance, I've never been in prison like that, but it must get to the point where you're so stripped back to your basic that you can only go back up again, and you're not ashamed to like go to encompass a new idea or a probability or a new thing that you could then invest time in, you know, and not be ashamed to do that. Does that kind of make sense?
It, very much so. I mean, prison was always meant to be, apart from punishment, it was supposed to be a place of solitude to sit and reflect on what you've done
and who you are. Yeah, yeah.
And the absolute basis of prison is exactly what I experienced and embraced, because it was that point when I was like, I don't want to be this person anymore. And you have to look in the mirror to see what you are and try and make a change.
Mm, definitely, yeah.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
But when was it you realised you wanted to be an artist?
Well, I think that's what, okay. Like that, I was thinking about that. You were talking about this, and I was thinking about there. I've done every job apart from being in a circus. I think I've probably done every job you can possibly imagine, right? And it was like, I've been a single mum twice. I've got two really amazing children and everything. And it was like, I brought them both up by myself. And then, so I just had this whole kind of, I was in this hamster wheel of like, you know, I kind of still made things like cards for people and things like this. But then I was just literally, my life was just great. That's the only way I can describe it. Okay. And then three things happened at once. One was that I was finding it really difficult to live in my home because there was an issue with where I lived to do with like antisocial behaviour. Yeah, and then when I was at work, I was being bullied by someone. I've been in that job for a while and I kind of enjoyed it, but then that just soured and we didn't have an HR department, so no one really wanted to listen. And then I was in this relationship with someone who I'd kind of fallen in love with, and then I found out they just lied to me about everything and found out he was married, and oh, it was awful.
Wow.
So I was kind of in this really weird triangle of like, I couldn't go to work and escape being at home, because at work I was just constantly trying to protect myself from all this stuff, and then when I go home I couldn't rest because all this stuff was going on at home, and then I didn't really have any emotional support anyway. I went on like that. And then it ended up that one day I went to work and I was sitting at my desk one day, and I think your brain is just your hard drive, isn't it? And my brain just went, you have to go home now to look after yourself.
Yeah.
You can't. And everything just wiped. It was the strangest thing. So I went home and I can't remember a couple of days after that what happened. And anyway, it ended up with me going to like, I went and had like counselling and stuff, and to try and, like I say, because I kind of understand what that's like to go down to the bottom and then come back up again. And then I realized that I just had no color in my life. Everything was just gray and boring and dull. And I'd always thought that if I didn't juggle the balls, despite not working in the circus or, you know, spin the plates, everything would fall to pieces. And in fact, that never happened. And I still carried on paying my mortgage. I still carried on getting my bills paid because it was always a way to try and make that happen. And then I think in that moment, when I came out of that, I kind of really tentatively rejoined society because it really had a massive impact on me. And then going to this mental health exhibition where I saw this sampler and everything. And so all these things kind of collided at the same time. And I was like, and I remember I tried to give up smoking so many times. I thought, right, I'm going to do it. I need to keep my hands busy as well. That's when I just started like making more stuff. And then it was just like I say, the return of the repressed. I could not stop making stuff. And my brain was like reinvigorated. I had to keep. And that's how I just became, I guess, an artist and making things, you know. And I haven't looked back since then. And my, and that's relatively in the last, oh my goodness, was in the last 10 years, I suppose, that that's been an intense period of my life, you know. So the other thing you take from that, like I was saying to you about going to prison and stuff, your life is never one thing. And mine isn't just this either, because I'll be doing other things at some point because I know that I've got more stuff that I want to do. So, yeah, so that's when it all happened for me, like that cathartic sort of epiphany of, like, you know, knowing all those things.
I mean, it sounds like you was always destined to be an artist of sorts. It was just what and when.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also, like, thinking about technology as well, I wrote a blog for years and years, right, called Pandora's Box, because my mum told me that she was going to call me Pandora. And so I always thought that was quite ironic because, you know, what was left in Pandora's Box when it was open was hope. And so hope is a really a fantastic sort of thing that we can all, you know, hold on to, because there is, it's nothing is over. I always think, even now, if I ever have an episode where I don't feel so great mentally, because life is really hard sometimes, Gary. I mean, isn't it? It's just like real struggle. Either people are struggling with money and stuff like that. So you can, I always think of it like having a cold now. So you have to just sort of think, yeah, I feel really rubbish today, but in a couple of days, I probably won't feel so bad. So I just have to sort of think about that. So I used to write this blog and I wrote about the same sort of things that I make art about now. But I think that with technology, our attention span is shrinking so much that I read a lot anyway. I read a lot of books, but some people don't really put aside the time to read. But they're much more, like I said, about being visual and doing a film degree. Like, they get more of an impact from something, from looking at it. So I kind of found my forte when I started just working with something that I could make quickly, say something quickly, rather than spend hours writing something, you know, that people just went, oh, I don't really want to read about that. And it's all like, you know, you get these observational comics as well. I always think that the kind of art that I make is a bit like that. So we'd go and see observational comics and you laugh at them because you go, oh God, I never thought anyone else thought that thing. Yeah, you know, I thought it was just me. And that's why you find it funny. So I think that sometimes, because I've had people, there's that thing people say, isn't it? If people either get a positive reaction or a negative, as long as you're getting a reaction from people, that's really important, you know?
Because you're saying it on the tea towel, it does have an innocence about it, doesn't it?
It's a passive thing. It's something that you rely on and is passive, and it's not something that you would ever think would actually make you stand back and think about something. Like I said earlier on to you, it's like if you shout things at people and say, like, everyone goes, yeah, well, I know that, you know, the Tories are idiots or whatever, but if you make people think about something in another way, I think that you're paying homage to the fact that they are intelligent people that you want to think about those things, you know. And also, but that's the way I want to say it. So if you understand that narrative, that's good as well. I don't know, you know, so it's just got so many different things to say about that, you know.
Well, which piece do you think that you've created has got the strongest emotional connection?
I don't know. I mean, I get different sort of reactions to things. I don't know. I really wouldn't know.
Well, it sounds like, if you don't mind me interjecting, the one that you had stolen obviously had the biggest emotional connection to someone.
Yeah, but that's really, you know what's really weird about that one is a lot of the particular ones in the Tea Towel collection, I get a lot of emails, people asking me about them, are they for sale and stuff, and, you know, because they wanted to buy it and everything. But no one's ever asked me about that one in particular. But the story behind that,
tell us how it came about being stolen and what it was and what have you.
Yeah, okay. So I was invited to show the tea towels in sequential order, because they're really important, because one of the things that came out of creating them was that actually they became like a diary of events that happened from like this time in lockdown 4 years ago and then to what's happened since then. And I find that really fascinating. So not only do they contain their own little narrative, there's a whole narrative. So they're all exhibited in sequential order, okay? One to, I think it was 139 then, because I've made more since then. And so they all have their own sort of sequence of events, and they all represent different individual things. And they all had a little card. So where they're all being shown, which was, shall I say where it was? Riverside Studios. Riverside Studios is an arts complex centre where they filmed like the first Doctor Who. So I'm a big, massive Doctor Who fan there and everything. Lots of great TV shows right on the River Thames, and really successful. I was getting loads of people saying to me, oh, this is great, I love your work and everything, and I'd love to buy this one or whatever. And then I told the people that were on the kind of box office reception, if anyone asked about things like that, just to give them one of my little cards and they could get in touch with me. So what happened on this particular weekend was that I've been told that this particular tea towel had fallen off the wall and somebody, a patron, had folded up and put it on the back of a chair. So the this particular net was a lady that took it, okay, which really upsets me as well. So she'd been at the box office and talking to the staff and saying to them, oh, I really want to buy one of these tea towels. I mean, how many exhibitions have you been to, Gary, and looked at art, right? You might like to want to buy something, but you'd find out about it because that's what those little red stickers are for, but you don't take it away. It's not a McDonald's or something. You can't just have it there and then to take it away. So the lady on reception explained to her and said to her, well, if you want to find out about them, you need to contact the artist. So Megan gave her a card and she went, okay, all right, off she went. And then she's clearly seen on CCTV taking that one off the back of the thing and putting it in her bag. Now, I don't know whether, I did think about it afterwards and I thought, well, maybe her intent was to actually return it and a bit later, but actually the trajectory from where it was to where reception was is quite short. And I don't know, it just really pissed me off because I just thought, and that one wasn't a particular one that anyone ever asked me questions. So I think that was definitely, it was the opportunity arose. And so she just helped herself to it. But I don't know how you could possibly enjoy that knowing that you took it. And then my anxiety got really bad. And I was thinking, well, because then I made a piece of art to replace the piece of art that was taken. And it was the queen, it was a tea towel of the Queen of Hearts on it, and the Knave of Hearts stealing her jam tarts. You know that rhyme, the Queen of Hearts. And so I just put, you stole my fucking heart. But the art in heart was a different colour. And so I said, right. And I went the next day and I went, right, you've got to put that piece there. And I want you to leave the original description because this new description says that, you know, this is where somebody stole this piece. And I was all kind of, and then I just thought, and then the next day I thought, actually, you know what, I'm really concerned because the more, when you highlight something to people about somebody taking it, actually someone else might come and take something else. Yeah. You know, like when you make something obvious, then it becomes obvious, then it becomes an opportunity, the obvious then becomes an opportunity, you know.
So yeah, I just put a thought in people's minds, aren't you?
Exactly. So I just thought on the following day, I thought, no, actually, it's really messing with my, I'd rather keep them safe because they're going on show later in the year. Yeah. And I don't really want to, I don't want any more taken and everything. So I worked out it was like 600 hours of working, thousands of hand-cut letters, you know, as well as then like spending an unhealthy amount of time looking at details on an auction site.
But like you said, though, it was one link in the chain of 139 pieces.
Yeah.
But doing what you've done is perfect. You've made a new link for the chain.
Yes.
And it's got its own story. So
yeah, exactly.
I think that's perfect anyway.
Yeah, exactly. For me, art has always been a way of like supporting me in a crisis. I mean, like you talk about your son, but it's like I had cancer as well. Just as my art thing was taking off and everything around about Cash is King, I got diagnosed with breast cancer, and it was just the worst experience I've ever been through, physically and mentally, like all the other thing I've told you. But and if I hadn't have had my art and stuff like that to concentrate on, I don't know what I would have done. Yeah. Because that thing of focus is so important when you have like detrimental things happen to you in your life. It really is. You know, my friend Kate Murdoch, well, she said to me, you mustn't let this thing that happened recently, you know, like fester, and you must move on. I said, no, absolutely. And then, so you just let it go, let it all go and everything. And then Gary sends you a nice message saying, do you want to be on my podcast? And I go, see, that's it. That's like the world telling you that you just let things go and other things come in, you know. You shut that door and you go open the next door, you know.
Well, I've got to say, you've thrown Kate's name in the hat there. Kate is another one. Since the moment I saw her work, every time I even hear her name, I have that little bit of warmth come in as well. I love Kate's work. Absolutely love it.
She is just a lovely, I just love her so much. And she's just like, she's so gracious and she's so like, she's so clever. And it's like, yeah, she's just been a massive support to me. You know, we regularly go and we have little trips out and we go to exhibitions and stuff. So it's nice. Yeah.
Brilliant. I love Kate Murdoch. And if there was you and five other artists, past and present, what would your ideal group show be?
Oh my Lord. Okay. Well, present, Cornelia Parker. I bloody love her work so much. I just think she's so smart and clever what she does. Past, I don't know. Oh, goodness me. I really don't know. So much art in the world, but I like, who do I like? I like those old Dutch masters. I like Vermeer. I think his work is just so beautiful. Alice Neal. Oh, she's just fabulous, so brilliant. Her work is just fantastic. I quite like the idea of like doing something for Yoko Ono. I'm gonna go and see her exhibition soon. And then who else would it be? I don't know, probably Carrie, because I like what Carrie does. She'd be there when we'd have a chat about things and go, what do you think of that? I don't know, how many is that?
Including Carrie's four.
Oh, let's have a think. I don't know. I mean, if you're talking about art, I mean, like, what about Carrie Fisher? She was like, you could say she was an artist. She was a writer. Yeah. She'd be fabulous to chat to about stuff, you know. Love that.
What a funny, funny person she was, with a bonkers life.
Absolutely bonkers. Can you imagine? I mean, can you imagine your mum being Debbie Reynolds and your dad being Eddie Fisher and, like, all that stuff, like, I mean, you talk about Vanessa Bell and all that Bloomsbury group, but all that Hollywood group where they're all kind of like, next week I'm marrying Richard Burton, then I might be friends with Liz Taylor, or I might be like, you know, it's just like crazy, isn't it? All that stuff. It's just bonkers. And yeah, like when you think, great. When you get older as well, you think, God, life's actually quite short, you know. Two things you definitely don't know, when you're going to be born and when you're going to die. And then it's like that bit in the middle. It's just like, I don't know how some of these people fit all this stuff in, you know. I've just thought of another artist, though. Sorry, you saying that about the Barbara Kruger. I went to her exhibition. Did you go to that one at the Serpentine? Well, that was incredible. That was a bit like Cornelia Parker, but with just words and saying things. And that really blew my mind. So I'd have to like maybe I'd have to bump someone and I'll bump Vermeer and then bring her Barbara Kruger, I think, definitely. Because she was like, that was like, whoa, she's read my mind, you know. Yeah. So that was great. Yeah.
It's great when that happens, isn't it?
Yeah, really. It doesn't happen all the time because sometimes you go to exhibitions and you go, and you just politely say, oh, yeah, that bit was good, you know.
If you wasn't an artist, what would you like to be?
Oh, goodness me. What would I like to be? Probably someone like a psychiatrist who sort of helped people with things, because I really believe like communication is everything. And also like talking about stuff is really important. And that's kind of communication is being kind of lost as well. But I'd love to be like a therapist, like in some way to sort of help people, like something that involved helping people, because I wish there'd been times when there had been someone who'd helped me, but my resilience was that I kind of helped myself in the end, you know. But I know, so I know that's quite difficult when you don't have anyone, but I've been helped myself by people, so that's really important. And I got a really lovely story, like before we go and everything, that I must tell you. So when I was a kid, and I told you that I had problems with spelling and everything, it was the first or second year of school, and we used to have this English teacher. You wouldn't be allowed to do this now, right? If you're a teacher, you probably get sacked. But there was this, me and this other kid in my class called Toby Russell, and we were just like mates. But I obviously had dyslexia, and so did he. And I used to go home and learn all my spellings and stuff, 10 spellings a week, go back to the class whenever it was. And that teacher I used to get one right. And the teacher used to make me and him stand up in the class and ridicule us in front of everybody else.
Bonkers,
eh? And yeah, but you know what? He became a silversmith and he's got a piece of work in the V&A. And so have I. So Brilliant. Fuck you, Miss Jones.
Superb.
So everybody has got where we are. We all look the same. Like we have the same bits and pieces, heart, brain, whatever. But it's like, everybody is not the same. Everybody has a compulsion to do something different in the world. And if you can't get fucking 10 spellings right, kids, don't worry about it, because you're going to be doing something else, you know?
Please tell me you've got an artwork called Fuck You, Miss Jones.
I'm going to make one, I think.
Oh, you should. It's perfect.
I should, yeah. But that goes back to, like, this is what comes out of having conversations with people. I'm going to put that on my list of things to do now.
What have you got coming up at the moment?
Okay, so I'm going to... What I'd like to do, it's a shame that I had to end the Tito exhibition early, because I think that it would be great to have shown them a bit longer and everything, because they had such a big effect on people, and that was just really lovely for me to hear that. So I'm kind of like fishing around trying to see if I can... A space like... Oh, blimey... you know, Somerset House would be great for them, sort of thing. So I'm just trying to, I tried to sort of, wait, stop it. Sorry, cat attacking me. But it's like trying to, you know, reach out and find spaces that would be appropriate. I like visiting other places around the country as well. I was going to go back and do the Fringe Arts Bath Festival, but it coincides with something else I'm doing. But sorry, I'm being very long-winded here, Gary. But I've got the Knitting and Stitching Show, which is massive, and that's going to be in Alexander Palace later in the year in October. And then I'm going to Belfast to show the tea towels in the Titanic Centre. So I love Belfast. It's such an amazing city. And it's like, I can't wait to do all of those things. And then just, but in the middle, I haven't really got anything to do in the middle. So it'll be a build up to doing all of those things. But something else always seems to come up, you know. So but I did say to myself this year, I'm not going to be paying for so many entries, because you don't really make anything from when you're an artist. You really don't. Most of it is just you're paying out for a lot of things, you know, and it's all very expensive. And so, so I kind of like stepping back from that, I think, now, and just, yeah. And teaching, like I love doing those workshops. So yeah, and like, you know, maybe working with you to do your charity, the one that you do with Alison Lapper and everything.
Yeah.
I've got, she's fantastic, really.
She's amazing, isn't she? And how can people see what you're doing online, be it website or social media?
Yeah, so I've got a website that I've made myself, which is like www.thesubversivestitcher.com. So you can find me there. I've got a little gallery on there, and then or on my Instagram handle, which is at The Subversive Stitcher, That's right, I think, but it's got like lowercase things in it. But you'll find me anyway. You'll find me on there. I'm there.
That's ideal.
Yeah.
Ollie, thank you very much
for
your
time. See you
later,
Gary. Oh, bless
See
your
you
heart. You have a good day. See you later.
And Bye. Yourself. Bye-bye. See you later.
Bye.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode of the Ministry of Arts podcast. It's a podcast that's produced with the help of the listener. And if you like what you've heard and you think you might be able to give a little support, there's two ways in which you can do it. If you go over to the Ministry of Arts Instagram profile, you'll find a Linktree drop-down box. And in that box, you'll find two links. One is called Buy Us a Coffee, and it's pretty much that. You can make a one-off payment, the price of a cup of coffee. Or, if you're able and want to do it more long-term, you can become a Ministry of Arts Patreon, where you can sign up to support us on a monthly basis, and 100% of your support goes back into the podcast. And if you're not able to do that, that's absolutely fine. This content is free for everyone. But we would urge you to follow us on your socials and show us a bit of love that way. Either way, thanks for listening and see you next time. Ta-da.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.